Chapter 7, The Covering of Salvation. Take the helmet of salvation. Ephesians 6:17.
I will never forget the day I first saw her. The experience is indelibly etched in my mind. I arrived home after a taxing day at the office, walked through the front door, and shouted, "Kathy, I'm home." No response. I looked in all the usual places, the kitchen, the laundry room, the bedroom, but Kathy was nowhere to be found. Suddenly, I became aware of a soft sobbing sound. "Is that you, Kathy?" I asked as I moved towards the sound. Still no answer. As I walked into the bathroom, I saw my wife looking down at a tiny form in the palm of her hand. Sensing my presence, she looked up resolutely and said, "Her name is Grace." As I looked down at my ninth child, Kathy began to share a vision she experienced earlier that afternoon. She had returned home deeply troubled after a routine doctor's visit. Her obstetrician had expressed concern regarding the viability of our six-week-old preborn child, so Kathy went straight to bed and began to pray. "Show me your will, Lord," she pleaded. "You know how desperately I want another baby." In the ensuing hours, she asked God to show her His grace. After a protracted period of intensive prayer, Kathy suddenly saw an image. A little girl was walking away from her, hand in hand with the Lord. The girl bounced along in perfect peace and harmony, and then suddenly turned and looked directly into Kathy's eyes. "Goodbye, Mommy," she said. Instinctively, Kathy blurted out, "I just want to hug you." At that very moment, she felt an intense presence, and then she began to bleed. When I encountered Kathy standing in the bathroom, she was cradling a perfectly formed embryo in her hands. "Why Grace?" I asked. Without a moment's hesitation, she responded, "God has answered my prayers and has given me His grace. He has shown me that I didn't lose our baby. I know exactly where she is." That day in the bathroom, I gained a fresh perspective on the helmet of salvation, for in the midst of the most disorienting pain a mother can experience, the helmet of salvation had served to protect my wife's perspective. As the breastplate of righteousness is a spiritual heart protector, the helmet of salvation is a spiritual head protector. It is the covering that protects our minds so that we do not become disoriented in the throes of spiritual warfare. When the denizens of darkness land their most devastating blows, the helmet of salvation guards our minds and grants us perspective. First and foremost, the helmet blunts the blow of death and enables us to view our circumstances from the perspective of eternity. For Kathy, the death of our baby was the ultimate disorienting blow. Yet, a glimpse of the salvation that is to come blunted its edge. The helmet of salvation allowed her to take her eyes off the present and fix them on the future. It enabled her to look beyond her sorrow and see the promise of salvation. It was the balm of Gilead that salved her deepest longings. It healed her broken heart when nothing else would do. Postmodernity seeks to deny death by driving it into the closet, to trivialize it by treating it irreverently, or to circumvent it through the use of cliches. In sharp distinction, Christianity demonstrates that death is defeated. Cultural thanatologists may urge us to accept death as a friend, but Christian theology sees death as the enemy. Says Philip Yancey, "Christian faith does not offer us a peaceful way to come to terms with death. No, it offers instead a way to overcome death. Christ stands for life, and His resurrection should give convincing proof that God is not satisfied with any cycle of life that ends in death. He will go to any extent, he did go to any extent, to break that cycle. This is the message that radiates from the lips of righteous Job. Satan had wielded the sword of death with devastating fury. He butchered Job's livestock. He murdered Job's legacy. And if God had permitted him to do so, he would have snuffed out Job's life. The devil's devastation was so complete that Job's wife had lost all perspective. With her mind careening out of control, she cried, "Curse God and die!" Job, however, saw his plight from the perspective of eternity. Having donned the helmet of salvation, he was empowered to declare, "I know that my Redeemer lives, and that in the end he will stand upon the earth, and after my skin has been destroyed, yet in my flesh I will see God. I myself will see him with my own eyes, I and not another. How my heart yearns within me." Furthermore, the helmet of salvation blunts the disorienting blow of doubt. When Kathy's doctor expressed concern regarding the viability of our baby, she experienced a mind-numbing sense of foreboding. Ferocious waves of fear swept away all perspective. She was plagued by the possibility that she'd never see her baby alive. Yet, in the center of that storm, she regained her perspective. The helmet of salvation assuaged her doubts and drove away her dread. God gave her a glimpse of glory, and she was filled with the certainty that one day soon she would see her baby again, only this time in a glorious, resurrected body perfectly engineered for a renewed universe. As she expressed it on the day of baby Grace's funeral, "If you lose something, you don't know where it is. I know where my baby is, and I know whom she is with." That ultimately was the perspective of Job. The certainty of salvation not only assured him that in his flesh he would see God, but it assured him that in his flesh he would once again see his children. As Yancey aptly puts it, the author takes pains to point out that in the end Job received double all he had lost in his time of trials, 14,000 sheep to replace the 7,000, 6,000 camels to replace 3,000, 1,000 oxen and donkeys to replace 500. There is, however, one exception. Previously, Job had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and in the restoration, he got back 7 sons and 3 daughters, the same number, not double. Yancey goes on to suggest that the divine author might well have been hinting at heaven. From that view, Job did indeed receive double, 10 new children to go with the 10 he would one day rejoin. Often, when I'm asked how many children I have, I say 8, 4 boys and 4 girls. My kids inevitably correct me, "No, Dad." They say, "We have 9 children, 4 boys and 5 girls." In their minds, there is no doubt that they have a baby sister who preceded them to heaven. Life after life is not a crutch or a cop-out. It is a certainty. As Christians, we stake our lives in the hope that God will transform our lowly bodies so that they will be like his glorious body. Finally, the helmet of salvation serves to blunt the devastating blow of disappointment. I don't pretend to comprehend or even to be able to fully relate to the disappointment a woman experiences when a baby dies, although over the past year I've gotten a glimpse of the toll it's taken on my wife. Disappointments, however, do not merely manifest in the dramatic. Disappointments accumulate over time, burying hope under an avalanche of despair. A mother-in-law contracts Parkinson's. A father-in-law comes down with cancer. A mother aches as she watches the love of her life slowly suffocate to death due to a fibrosing in his lungs. A wife lives with constant pain. Why? Why me? Why doesn't God answer our prayers? Why doesn't he just tell us why? All of these and a host of other questions pulsated through Job's mind in the dead of night. Yet, the book of Job never answers the why question. Instead, after 30-plus chapters of rambling speculation, God appears and asks some questions of his own. Who is this that darkens my counsel with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you will answer me. As Frederick Buchner puts it, God doesn't explain, he explodes. He asks Job who he thinks he is anyway. He says that to try to explain the kind of things Job wants explained would be like trying to explain Einstein to a little neck clam. In essence, God asked Job if he'd like to try his hand at running the universe for a while. Try creating a lightning bolt. How about producing just a tiny drop of dew? Says Yancey, the message behind the splendid poetry boils down to this. Until you know a little more about running the physical universe, Job, don't tell me how to run the moral universe. The impact of God's speech on Job is almost as amazing as the speech itself, although God never answers question one about Job's predicament. The blast from the storm flattens Job. He repents in dust and ashes, and every trace of disappointment with God is swept away. The solution to our disappointments is never found in answering the question why. It is found in trusting God in the midst of our whys. One glimpse of glory, and all Kathy's whys faded to black. The helmet of salvation permitted her to stand firm against all the devil's schemes and enabled her to look beyond death, doubt, and disappointments towards our destiny. In Kathy's vision, baby Grace walked away in perfect peace and harmony, hand in hand with her Lord, when Kathy next lays eyes on her. She will be walking into her embrace.